San Miguel Treasure Tours is sponsored by St. Michael Academy and is presenting the most famous treasure story of all time with Captain Bob. Captain Bob is the custodian of the life story of the life-size Golden Madonna and Christ Child statue. It's a story he's been telling since 1980, when he first discovered the Maravillas, the Spanish galleon that sank in 1656. The story is the legacy of Captain Bob, Chief Executive Officer of St. Michael Academy, for he's the custodian and discoverer of this unique treasure, a story which has been copyrighted in the Library of Congress. It was in 1980 that Captain Bob found the wreck of the Maravillas near Memory Rock, Bahamas. He's also a marine archaeologist who can provide information and other historical artifacts that were found by the Maravillas shipwreck. Since finding the Maravillas shipwreck, Captain Bob has been searching for the 1,800-pound Golden Madonna and Christ Child statue that was also lost when the Maravillas went down. To those who study such artifacts, Captain Bob is quick to point out that the Golden Madonna statue is priceless, and in the religious world, its value cannot even begin to be measured. So, without further ado, let's go to Captain Bob.
All right, Bob, tell us a little bit about yourself and who you are and what you're all about.
Well, obviously, I'm at this time one of the most famous treasure hunters in the world, most successful, I may say, and I'm not saying that to promote celebrity. The celebrity is sort of given to you by the people themselves who show interest. I've even been compared and written locally in the Vero Beach area by a very famous Red Palmer live show who puts me in the same class with from an astronaut to a treasure hunter, and he's including me with Garth Brooks, Al Wharton, former Secretary of State, Colin Powell, even Mike Wallace, and then he's got Captain Bob stuck in there, who has found millions of dollars worth of treasure.
Well,
I guess I'm a successful treasure hunter.
Okay, well, I have to ask you, first of all, treasure hunter, okay? Define what a treasure hunter is. There's so many definitions out there. Are we talking about treasure that is buried treasure, you know, on land, or are we talking about treasure that is out at sea?
Well, being obviously my prefix of captain to my name, Bob, puts me in the sea, and that's, of course, where my primary interest is, because basically things that are buried in the sea by shipwreck are pretty well preserved for 300, 400, and 500 years. And I was primarily, being a Floridian, born in Tarpon Springs, an ex-hard hat diver, sponge diver, Greek in essence, my family. You know, we very interesting history. We taught the Navy in World War II about hard hat diving. Hard hat diving was never really known by the U.S. Navy until the Greeks, who had been practicing that for years and years in Greece, came over here, which my family was one of them, settling in Tarpon Springs, Florida, developing the sponge industry, and that's where I was born. So I was born Captain Bob. When my mother looked at me, she said, "Ah, Captain Haralambos, but I'm going to call you Bob for short."
There you go. Well, describe, I know a lot of people are probably going sponge diving. What is sponge diving?
Well, sponge diving, of course, is one of the oldest, industries of the sea, practiced by all the way back to Alexander the Great, which, by the way, I'm related to.
Oh,
and
there you go.
From the name Gonatas, coming from the island of Colonus, and Antigonus Gonatas was the general that took over Alexander's empire and settled his navy in the island of Colonus, Greece, where my grandfather came from, and my grandfather was a Gonatas. So I'm not spinning a yarn, I'm telling you the truth. We have a connection all the way back to Antonio Antigonus Gonatas, who was the general that took over the entire empire of Alexander the Great. So I guess I've got seafaring blood flowing through my veins, and a quest for adventure. And I always sort of pick on the impossible dream, because that keeps me inspired. It keeps me going, because, you know, you never get to the very, very end. It always seems to lead to more and more and more and more, and sort of widespreads and gets sort of spooky too, because it takes on things that happen in the universe.
Gotcha, gotcha.
Not just Mother Earth. But I like the ocean because, by the way, the ocean's 5/6 of the world, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely it is. And there's so many things that we still need to discover what is going on with the ocean and what is actually underneath the beautiful, serene water that surrounds us.
Yeah, and you know that you realize, of course, that there's been millions, not millions, 1.2 million shipwrecks from the time of history, as I spoke about, from the beginning that's been recorded history that's in the ocean. The Spanish is where I sort of place my efforts because of being a Floridian. You know, Florida was named by the Spanish Empire.
Yep.
And that's my deal, and I'm a historian. Do I call you James or Jimmy?
James, Jimmy, JB, whatever you want to call me.
JB, that sounds good.
Yes.
JB.
Yes.
You know, this is a story that the public has the right to the truth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not only a historian, I'm an investigative historian.
Mm.
Yet they call me Treasure Bob because that's a good reference. There's been quite a bit that's been written since I proceeded in the early 70s, and I'm still in it, and there's a lot of characters that I've touched that are, some are famous, and some aren't, some I won't mention, some I will. Some were liars, and some tell the truth, but they're all pirates. You know that, don't you?
Pirates,
that,
yes.
all treasure hunters are the real pirates of the Caribbean. Let me read something to you.
Okay, go ahead.
The real pirates of the Caribbean, and this is the first paragraph of my wraparound, the sunken treasure galleon Maravilla, the famous treasure story of all time. The real pirates of the Caribbean are the treasure hunters who cannot resist the camaraderie of other treasure hunters. And by the way, we all sort of have a community in our own right, drinking down rum. And while doing so, rob from each other their intellect, but what's our purpose? Not to massage each other, quote, is to steal their intellectual research materials of history. Thus, what happens to all of us, there's plagiarizing one another, resulting in competitive stories, contradiction, and claims, and what's our aim and mission? Hoping for more fame, money, and satisfaction of huge, huge egos. That's the beginning of my paragraph. That's a real definition of a modern-day treasure hunter who's really a pirate.
So, in other words, what you're basically saying here is our modern-day treasure hunters are the modern-day pirates, is pretty much what you're saying.
Yeah, they try to, you know, sell themselves and pawn themselves off on publications in order to satisfy the bureaucrats that really control the seas and give permits, especially off the state of Florida, in order to retrieve gold legally under different statutes that are already in place, governmental statutes. So they always pawn themselves off as being these great historians. But you know what? And I don't speak and say this for myself. There's why I set myself apart from them, and that's this. They all look and use their magnetometers for metal, gold, silver, and they forget archaeology.
Right.
And that's where the history is.
So, in other words, we could almost describe you almost as the Indiana Jones of the sea, almost.
Ah, gee whiz, you just gave me my new title. Indiana Jones of the sea.
Yes, the Indiana Jones of the sea. Well, before we
really... Oh, but wait a minute. In the Indiana Jones story, you know, I take part of that. You know, they were looking for the Ark of the Covenant, right?
Right, right.
And when the Nazis found it, they turned to skeleton and bones, correct?
Correct.
Because it was a very, very... a spiritual situation.
Right.
So the Nazis weren't going to have the Ark of the Covenant, and I'm in the exact same. And it's wonderful you've come up with that title. I'm in the exact same position because what am I really all about? I'm looking to solve the mystery of the life-size solid gold Madonna and Christ Child statue of Spain that had a purpose in history, and when it's recovered. In fact, if anybody had tried to recover it prior to my placement, their bones would have fallen off of them too, just like Indiana Jones, because it happens to be in an area in the sea that's extremely dangerous. Why? Because It's got also a meteorite fell there, and also a Russian killer satellite that had a uranium-235 on board. And that means that if you got near that statue, your bones about 2 weeks, just like the guy that the Russian that got killed, a Russian guy over in England.
Right, right.
And he got polluted in 2 weeks. He was gone.
Right.
Well, I think you'd get gone a little faster if you were in the water, because it's protected by this part of uranium-235, part of the satellite that fell next to it. But the half-life is almost over now, so it's time for me to, I think, to seriously consider retrieving it once I straighten out the bureaucrats.
Right, and we're gonna get into all that here in just a little bit, maybe on this program, possibly next program. We'll see where things go. But I guess my main question here is about Captain Bob. What inspired you to become a treasure hunter at first?
Well, you want me to be honest?
Sure, absolutely.
It was totally spiritual. I'm not a psychic.
Okay.
I don't believe in all that crap. I believe in the creator of the universe.
Right.
And he's quite a good friend of mine. And he sort of touched me. And I've confessed that I not only know him, but I love him and communicate with him. And the story was unfolded to me, and I was given the opportunity in supernatural ways, and too many incidents that obviously when you crisscross them together, it couldn't possibly be accident. And it brought me into this this story, and to seek the Madonna and return it to its proper place, because it was connected with spiritual. How do we say it? Kings, popes, and what have you?
Right.
400 years ago, and so that's what inspired me. I wanted to find it. I was the Madonna and Christ Child statue, as valuable as it could possibly be. I certainly wanted to find something that was in history far more important than King Tut's deal found in the archives of the pyramids, because this was the center of Christianity, this particular Madonna, and the purpose for it in 1600.
Wow, wow.
I actually started in 1500, JB, because this actually split Christianity, the loss of this. I can say it in a profound, non-hesitant statement.
Okay.
If this Madonna had continued on its journey, we wouldn't have Protestants or Protestants today. Because what happened was when this was lost along with the ship and the 2 billion, that's why the Meraviglia is the most famous treasure story of all time, because it's King Philip IV. And, you know, we're getting into the second segment. Let's stay with the first segment.
Right.
I'm telling you why I got involved.
And
I don't want to sound, I'm not trying to sound arrogant about this. This was a very humbling experience. I had to give up practically everything I had owned in order to even put this thing in gear. I know I initially put in $40,000 of my money. Nearly wow. Cost me a divorce.
Yeah.
my wife wanted to buy a new washing machine, and I wanted to go to the Bahamas.
Right.
So I wound up getting her a little one of these little cookers, and I told her, you know, this washboard will work just fine for a while. So she was washing clothes, and I'm headed for the Bahamas, because I figure I wasn't going to ever return anyway, so I didn't really care. That's the truth. I remember waving goodbye to her, and she was following me along the shore as I was leaving with my ship heading for the Bahamas. I really thought that I was probably going to get killed over there by pirates after I raised this Madonna. I figured that, by the way, there are some really bad guys out there that kill people and take over their vessels, and they put dope on it. But in this case, it was so highly publicized that I was going to retrieve the solid gold Madonna that I'm know they were out there waiting for me to go, you know, go precisely where it is, raise it up, and here they come. By the way, I had a 12-gauge shotgun with these pumpkin balls on it that I knew how to take care of them. But my whole point is they usually board your ship at night when you're sleeping.
Ah.
And I had my crew all set and how do I say it, schooled. In case we did, I had a fake Madonna on board, so when we got the real one, we could place it away. And then I told them, let them torture me a while, because, you know, they like thieves like to torture you before they take your money. You know, they want to scare you.
Right.
So I told them, until they saw blood come from my mouth, don't give up, even the fake one. But once they're satisfied, they'd get off the boat that they might live, and if they took me. Well, thinking these thoughts in mind, JB, was why I kissed my wife goodbye and didn't buy her washing machine.
All right, so we could actually say this is a real quest for you, almost, is what we can say, correct?
And add the word pilgrimage to it.
Okay, quest.
Because it's ongoing.
Right. Right. Now, let's you know, we got a brief background on you. We can actually start on give us a I don't want to say brief, because this is a pretty interesting story from things that I've read about it, and it really grasps me, and I really think the listening audience really needs to know about this, and we really need to dive into this. You know, I'm not even really sure where to begin with the whole story of this gold Madonna statue, but I guess we could start off with why the ship sank and where the ship sank, and then we can kind of dive into where the Madonna is at, why the Madonna hasn't been raised, and we can get, I mean, believe it or not, there's a lot of bureaucracy that is involved in with this statue, correct?
Yes, but really, in order to give this a reasonable foundation for comprehension, we probably should really start with why the Madonna was even created.
Okay.
In 1600, and the purpose of it.
Yes, absolutely.
Because even though it's a treasure and a detective story to me, and a pilgrimage and a quite interesting one, this thing, you know, JB, when I tell this story at a bar when I'm having a nice rum, and Coke, you know, I can tell them this, and I can hold them for an hour easy, and I'm not even pushing on them. You know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
And I take the medallion I wear, the first coin I found, and you know how coins are. You can let her move back and forth. Once you get them hypnotized, you know you got them as an audience. So, with tongue in cheek, I really believe that, to tell you that I think we really should start with why and what happened with King Philip IV. Who was the king of Spain and the kingdom of Spain, and what his purposes were. And, you know, he was he lived the best life. He was a man. He was terrible. He had more women than Hugh Hefner. And he was a king, and he was supposed to have some decency about it, but he had none. Then he had a conversion. He met this Maria de Agreda, this nun. Evidently, he fell in love with her after his wife died and his son died, and he didn't have an heir to the throne. Now, you have to understand something. You know why this is interesting, JB? We're talking about a kingdom just like the United States.
Yeah.
We're talking about they had not only had a maritime navy, they were the power of the world.
Mm.
They held the world together, and in fact, they used His Catholic Majesty, used the Vatican to keep things together, just like George Bush uses democracy, which is bullcrap. You know, Greenspan and I know the truth. We need to keep the oil together to keep our economy going. But the bottom line is, George Bush is no different than King Philip IV. They were both liars, and at least the truth is, until King Philip IV realized that in order to keep the empire together. He had a conversion. He had a very strong conversion, and this nun, Maria de Agreda, sort of converted him and gave him some values. So he decided he was going to cast. You see, Spain was in the business of money. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
Does that sound a little bit like Wall Street? And that's all they cared about. In fact, they quit even growing potatoes. They left being an agricultural nation. Boy, does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
And all they cared about was silver and gold. And they had their NASDAQ, and they had their Dow Jones, and it was bringing gold and silver from the world, their new discoveries to Spain, and that was their money. By the way, they had their investors too. You know, I can get into who the investors were, but we all know the oldest banking system in the world, who that was.
Right.
And they invested in these excursions and these huge ships that were built in order to keep this. That was their economy, economic system. So it was corrupt. He was morally corrupt. He lived in a cesspool atmosphere.
Mm.
But when he had the conversion, he decided, well, there's only one way I'm going to keep this kingdom together, and that's through faith. Mm. He couldn't use democracy because it was a kingdom.
Right.
But he did use a very important thing. So he cast this Madonna. And what did he do? And he had $2 billion on board because he, at that particular time, he was losing the war of Westphalia that was going on, which was the foundation of why he lost, or the empire got split, because the Madonna was to be similarly taken to the Vatican, and after it was cast, to symbolize the power of the Kingdom of Spain being Catholic, et cetera, which is Christianity, of course.
Right.
And then what happened was when the Madonna did sink with the $2 billion, wow.
Now, when you say, now let me stop you there for a second. When you say $2 billion, you're talking about $2 billion worth of treasure in, let's say, is this $2 billion worth of treasure back in that time, or is that what it's worth in today's standards?
Today's standards would be a minimum of $2 billion just in silver and gold, not even counting the Madonna.
Okay.
See, I intend to get $1 from every Catholic in the world. That's about $1.5 billion, $2 billion, and that's for the Madonna itself, not counting the loot. And I'm not kidding about that. I've already got $2 donated, so I'm headed for more donations.
and
I want it to go to the Vatican, but you know, I want something for all this effort.
Sure, sure. Now, I have to stop you there for a second, and let's talk about this. We're talking about the statue, of course, but why was the statue formed in the first place?
It was formed to come over on the Maravilla, which is part of a fleet that he had, with a tremendous amount, an unusual amount of treasure, of gold and silver, bullion and what have you, and jewels. You know, when I say jewels, I mean uncut rubies, sapphires, emeralds, in order to repay the investors who had, financed that particular trip.
Gotcha.
Which was the flota. There were different flotas, in other words, different periods of time. Just like when the Fed comes out and gives a deal on our economy every so often, they had the same thing going to keep the economy going. They had to replenish the money that they invested in order to get more money. And then when this ship sunk, King Philip IV had a serious problem. He couldn't pay off his debts. The soldiers decided they weren't going to fight like they were. For any kind of I'd say, and a little bit like Iraq, if you don't have any money, you can't fight.
Right.
Your soldiers aren't going to keep. You have to support it. So what happened was, at that point in time, poor King Philip IV was besides himself. Excuse me. And what happened? He lost the war.
Mm.
And then Christianity indeed did split. And that's about the time of Martin Luther. Therein you have the basis of why the Maravilla was even involved in what it was involved in, because it did contain probably the most valuable artifact that exists in the world today, including the King Tut.
Now, with you being a researcher and we'll say Marty, modern day, archaeologist, treasure hunter. Now, I'm assuming you have done research and you know that this statue was definitely on board this ship, correct?
I know exactly where it is. I have an eyewitness to precisely, as far as we're concerned, we already found it.
Okay.
I'm just keeping it in a vault that the U.S. government can't grab. They don't have a key to it. I do.
Right. And
so, you know, when you have a safety deposit box, and I've got the best in the world, and I think God Almighty is protecting it for me, because he intends for this Madonna to go where it was supposed to go. And I'm not going to sit there and worry about these bureaucrats. I'm going to outlive them. And when one of them dies and another one gets reelected or what have you, and I'm going to win, because if I raise it now and I have to battle over it, listen, I've had enough fighting on this thing. I've been on this project for 28, 35 years now.
Now let me ask you this: have you personally? Well, you mentioned something about the uranium, which we'll get into that in just a little bit, and kind of get into where it's at and stuff like that. But how did you personally find where the shipwreck was, and has anything else been recovered from the shipwreck in the way of, say, some of these jewels, gold, and the silver that have been on board?
I'll answer that if you don't tell them where I hid it.
That's fine. That's great. I won't. I promise. I won't.
First, of course, I based everything on faith. Okay. There was that inner feeling. But then, of course, knowing that I would be fighting bureaucrats and be fighting world opinion, and I wanted to share this with the world and with people, good feeling people. So I, of course, proceeded to raise scientific evidence to support which originally, and by the way, even Einstein said this, you can't, you can speak and think in abstract terms, mm-hmm. Listen, mankind only knows three dimensions, right?
Sure.
He knows width, height, depth, right?
Yep. Yep.
Einstein said there's two dimensions, matter and antimatter, right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how many dimensions scientifically they found there are?
I forget off the top of my head, but there's
11.
Yeah, I was going to say almost a dozen, I think. Yeah.
There's 11. Now, if three of them we know, I dealt on the others that the other eight that people don't know. And to me, for me to be able to look into that, I don't have a special human. What is that? I'm not psychic,
right.
And I don't. And I'm a man that depends on supernatural. How do I say it? Invisible beings. You can call them what you want to. You can call them angels. You can call them, but they're good guys because every single one of them in tough times when I was up against it. And, I'm not a particularly bright person. I've only got two PhD degrees, and but. One theology and one philosophy, and if I put that into gear as a captain, I'm not going to go anywhere. But when you're out on the sea and you're lost and you're in the middle of the devil's triangle, you got to have something going for you, JP.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now you mentioned the devil's triangle, also known as the Bermuda Triangle, and I do want to touch on that for just a second, and if you would. Give us a brief description of what the Bermuda Triangle is and the Devil's Triangle to the listening audience and the overseas audience that may not know where it's located but have heard of it before.
Well, I believe that one of the reasons that there is a thing called the Devil's Triangle or the Bermuda Triangle is because it is a device of the devil. And so what is he trying to? What is it that he doesn't want to happen? He doesn't. And what is in the apex of this devil's triangle? It was the Maravilla. This shipwreck sank, and the Madonna. And in my personal belief, and you'll never ever or anyone never can ever convince me otherwise, that the principal reason for this awful area, which I can describe some incidents to you that will make your hair stand up. That are real things that did happen to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I always said to myself, why is the devil there playing these tricks in dimensions we don't understand? The eight we're talking about.
Mm hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, give us.
And so to me, it was the Madonna and Christ Child. Very simple. Because who's the devil's archenemy? That's God, right?
Right, yeah. Yep, absolutely.
Hmm. And that's why I don't believe in the henchmen that work for him. There's a lot of people that don't realize it, of course, but they get information from him. My information comes from, the antithesis of Lucifer. And that's who I believe to be the true God. His name is not Allah. His name is Christ. I believe that Christ came from a dimension that we don't understand, that he is God. He is God in the flesh. I believe that people don't realize that he came into this dimension to reveal himself for certain people and certain for certain purposes. I obviously realize that Christianity sort of bastardized itself, and it's not really the Christianity that presented in the first century. However, I also believe that this Madonna had a purpose with King Philip IV, and I think my purpose and one of the reasons I've been assigned this job is that. Is the supernatural creator. He's not. His name, by the way, isn't Allah. His name is he gave his name. Was Jesus of Nazareth.
Right.
He was a Jew. And but he was a supernatural Jew that people didn't really understand what he was. But that's okay, too. I don't want to get into theology. What I really want to tell you is that when I communicate with the crew, I call him respectfully by the name he's presented himself to me, and he calls me by my respective name, too. If I hear of another name being called, you know, hey, SOB, come over here, I know it isn't him, so I don't listen to that voice.
Right, right.
I listen to the voice that says, hey, beloved, Hara Lambos, Captain Hara, Captain Bob. I'm going to put you on a treasure hunt that you will not believe how great it is and how supernatural it is if you listen to me. Because let me tell you something, as good a captain as I am, I got lost at sea. Would you believe that?
Now, when you say you got lost at sea, did you get lost at sea in the Bermuda Triangle or the Devil's Triangle as it's known?
Yes, 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 all of the above. And let me tell you something, there's a whole lot of them that disappear in that they have never heard of again. But you're hearing me, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you said...
Evidently, I got rescued.
Well, you said you had an example of some things that have happened in the Bermuda Triangle that had happened to you. And I'm sure the listening audience would love to hear an example or two of what has happened to you. Of what has happened to you in the Bermuda Triangle, also known as the Devil's Triangle. I would love to hear an example, because that's something that's kind of, I don't want to say has fascinated me, but I should say has intrigued me, along with many others out there. So if you could give us an example of something that has possibly happened to you in the Devil/Bermuda Triangle?
Well, I could give you many episodes, but we're going to save it, aren't we?
Yeah.
I'm going to just give you one.
Okay.
Let me give you one why what happened to me, which also happened to a Russian freighter.
Okay.
That sank right smack in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle in very deep water, almost 2 or 3 miles deep, which is in the center of the Gulf Stream,
correct,
which goes 5 knots north, bearing north degrees, 0 degrees, off the coast of Florida, in the channel that the Spaniards always took to come back to Spain from Cuba, Mexico, Peru, where they collected all the gold and silver. Well, I'm in the middle of it,
okay,
and this Russian freighter is there also, not nearby, but I referenced it later.
Okay.
When you have a storm, what do you see, JB? You see dark clouds, correct?
See dark clouds, lightning, all sorts of, yeah, pretty much dark clouds, lightning.
And an average seaman, you know, that sticks his chest out when he comes back from a trip bringing, say, Red Lobster to Boston Harbor. And even the perfect storm that we recently saw as a movie. Two storms colliding with one, you can't help but see it.
Right.
But what happened in this episode was all skies are blue as can be,
mm-hmm.
clouds and sun shining. But all of a sudden, you look in the distance and you see this white foam building up, coming toward you,
closer.
White foam, terrible wind. But when it hits you, it's not the normal storm. Vessels and boats, and that's why we have a bow and a stern,
mm-hmm.
JB, are made to go into any kind of a heavy sea. As long as the bow splits it and you are under power and it doesn't turn sideways, you ride the wave up
and then you come down,
correct?
Correct.
But it's a pretty hard bang, but it's a bang that has a sequence to it. You know, you rise up a few seconds and you come down. What was coming at me was something that had a instant vibration to it. And it was vibrating so intensely that even the Russian ship, which is made up of iron and quite much larger than my vessel, the Independent, has rivets in it. And ships aren't made to retain the vibration. If you vibrate something enough, what's going to happen to the rivets?
They're going to pop out and they're going to come loose.
And there goes a huge plate off the side of the ship. In comes the water, and down she goes. And that's the end of the Russian freighter. No one ever will see again. But Captain Bob, fortunately, realized this vibration. And besides getting on my knees, fearful because can you imagine being on something, you know, almost like a Disney World situation?
Well, it's not that I can imagine it, and it's funny when you mention the white foam, you gave me goosebumps. And the reason why I say that is, I guess I forgot to tell you at the beginning of this, I'm a native Floridian as well, and I have all my life I have been in the boating, and I've actually been out at sea, off the coast of Florida, pretty much off the coast of Fort Lauderdale, about 3 to 5 miles out in the Gulf Stream, and caught in a thunderstorm out there. Well, I shouldn't say a thunderstorm. It was a pretty wicked storm. And you have your typical Florida day. It starts out nice and sunny, few clouds. You go out fishing, and next thing you know, you got a line of thunderstorms that you're dealing with. And I was younger at the time. I was a teenager at the time. But I'll tell you, I was scared crapless. I was scared. And it's funny that you mentioned white foam. That's all I saw around us was white foam. Rain and white foam and wind and lightning and all that kind of stuff. So you gave me goosebumps when you mentioned white foam. And I know what you're talking about when it comes to the up and down and the banging. It's almost
like a tidal wave coming at you, but it's not a tidal wave.
Oh, I got to let
you can rise. I know how to escape a tidal wave. You know, you just go into deep water, and it'll rise. Your ship will rise up and settle down as the wave goes beyond you. In a sequence, of course, tidal waves are really a sequence.
Right.
They're not just one wave. But this foam, this churning of the sea, builds up very high. But what happens is when it hits you, it's not like, that's why you have a storm sail. On the aft part of a vessel,
mm-hmm.
and that's to make sure your bow always stays into the storm. Because if your stern was to kick around a little bit, the storm sail straightens you out, so your bow is always into the heavy sea.
Right.
But if it's vibrative, if it becomes a vibration, with how many vibrations per second, whatever is in there is just going to come loose. Anything man-made. No matter even if it's a modern vessel.
Right, right. I mean, whether it's metal or whether it's made out of fiberglass, I think anything.
I wasn't scared. I wasn't scared like you were. I knew I had purpose, and I knew I hadn't completed it yet. And that's the best part of following the Creator, because if you haven't completed your job, and you know your assignment well, and you've been trained for it, and you know you haven't gotten there yet, you kind of know somehow or another the super creator of the universe this is his purpose. So why would he give up on you? The only reason he gives up on you if you give up on him. So I didn't give up on him, and I didn't give up on the project. I knew I was going to find the Maravilla. I knew I was going to be involved. I didn't care whether, and I can go on to more stories about why Lucifer was after my butt. But I always got on the bow of the ship, and I would scream at him sometimes. I'd say, "You're not gonna win, you devil, you."
Well, that's a great example of things that do happen in the Bermuda Triangle, also known as the Devil's Triangle. Now, you mentioned being Florida, the Treasure Coast. You know, it's got that nickname. Most of these vessels that have sank due to whatever reason, are a lot of them located in this Bermuda Triangle or this little area known as the Bermuda Triangle? Or are most of them outside of it, and have most of them sank because of bad weather and this vibration that you describe?
Well, there's other incidents for ships, including airplanes,
that have gone down. Right.
And they never, and even the U.S. Navy has never been able to recover the true essence of what happened to those. And during World War II, those ones that, took off from Fort Lauderdale, you mentioned that, headed for Bahamas, never to be seen again. And there's been all kinds of theories about it. And some vessels that disappear, I can go on and on and on about the incidents I know about and why I was, brash enough to say that I think I know the real, I know the essence of why there is a Bermuda Triangle, but more importantly, the incidents that have caused some of these infamous happenings in history that people don't have the answer to. To me, it's a simple, very simple thing. No different than, I like you calling me Indiana Jones. See, he too pursued, he knew he was going to find the Ark of the Covenant, didn't he?
Right. Yeah, he did.
And the Ark of the Covenant had some significant, was a very significant part of history, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, you're going to have a real problem if you go over to Israel and Jerusalem and discuss with them, Nahanehu, that the Ark of the Covenant doesn't really count, and the Wailing Wall doesn't mean anything. You'd get in serious trouble, wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, you sure would. You sure would.
Well, you get in trouble with me too if you don't. If you say to me that the Golden Madonna and Christ Child doesn't mean anything to history, it's been too much part of my life for the last 35 years, and I realize the purpose of it—not to make me a celebrity or make me famous, but I'm just a servant. I'm just a guy doing the job, and. Whether I'm doing a damn good job or not, it's incidental. What's important is that I'm still staying on board God's ship or the Creator's ship in order to accomplish this project. Because let me tell you something, it's getting so when things get easy for me, I start getting scared because I think, uh-oh, this thing's coming to an end. I'm not going to be out of here.
Right.
And I don't want to be out of here yet. I want to see this thing to the end. Let me tell you something, JB. This is the most exciting thing that's ever happened to me in my whole life. In fact, it's right now. It's over half of my life.
Right. Yeah. You've been at this for a long period of time. Now, when we mentioned the whole Indiana Jones and with all the things that kind of happened with him and his search for the covenant, there was a lot of what do we call it, curses and stuff like that happened during the movie. And I guess I'm assuming here that a lot of these things. I mean, have you had any curses or anything along those lines other than your experience in the Bermuda Triangle with the weather and stuff like that? Have you had any weird things happen to you to stop you from reaching your goal in raising other than the bureaucracy that we'll get to in quite some time, another episode, I should say. But have you had any mysterious curses or anything like that happen to you while searching for the Madonna statue?
Absolutely. But just remember something. God does curse.
Yeah.
It says so, and if you believe, you know, some people don't believe in the New Testament. The Old Testament, you know what the last word is?
Go ahead and tell us.
It says, I will send you a spirit like Elijah. I'm quoting it.
Okay.
It's the last paragraph of the Old Testament. Who will bring the hearts of the fathers to the children, and the hearts of the children to the fathers, and that sort of represents family life and also, I'm sure, theological life. And unless he accomplishes that, listen to what the last words are, lest I will send you a curse. Last word. So curses can come. Some people believe it comes from hell. Some people have this Pollyanna type of theology, I call it. And they believe that, you know, oh, no, there's a God, a creator's all love, nothing happens, blah, 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 blah. Well, I don't believe that. And so for you to ask me, did I encounter curses, I want you to be a little more specific. From the bad guy or from the good guy?
Well.
From the devil or Lucifer or from the creator, who hates him, by the way. They've got a war going on, and the main thing is not to get in the middle of it. Because, you know, it's like getting in the middle of two guys fighting, you know. If you do, you're going to get your head knocked off. So you better stand behind the good guy, because that's the one that's representing you and protecting you.
Well,
got it?
I hear you on that. And I guess what I'm asking here is from what you have described, that someone does, you know, whether it's the devil, whether, you know, if you're even a non-believer, whether it's a negative being or whoever, someone has tried to stop you from finding the Madonna statue. And I guess what I'm asking here is, I guess, from the bad guy, I guess, have you had any bad experiences while searching for this Madonna statue from the bad guy, I guess we can call it? Have you had any negative experiences from that?
That's my whole story,
yeah.
JB. I got a 700-page book that's full of the bad guys' attempts to stop the project. First, you have to explain why you are even on it, and then, of course, the happenings. But along with the bad happenings, there are good happenings that compensate for it and sort of keep you going. It's like, even though you have a meal, and it's a darn good one. Sometimes you get a hold of a meal that isn't so good, you know, and you have a pain in the you know what.
Right.
And so the bottom line is, yes, it's just a matter of what area you want to deal in. I've been encountered in the Bahamas with some really, I mean, the thing's like a detective story, you know. There's definitely death involved here. One particular party that was involved with this project, which I regret very much, came from California. And he had spent maybe $350,000 in outfitting his vessel with his divers and what have you, mm-hmm. and his helicopter on his pad, and he came through the Panama Canal, and he came and joined me on the quest for the Maravilla. And I just asked him to, he looked at me, and he was a real smart aleck, but he was a good pilot, both on the sea and in the air, with his helicopter, and they definitely wanted to, they had gotten quite a bit of investment. Caribbean Gold Company was the name of the company. This is a matter of fact, and I'll never forget this. I told him, I said, you know, you're going to need protection on this project. He said, what are you talking about? I'm this and I'm that and blah, 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 blah. So I thought to myself, uh-oh. So when you were asking me, did I have any, obviously, you know, if you're in a battle and you're wielding the sword in the front lines and people that are on your left flank and your right flank, if you give them instruction in order to protect themselves in the battle and they poo-poo it, sure enough, they're going to get the head cut off. Well, this poor guy, all I asked him to do was to put this flag on board his vessel and dedicate himself to the project of why we were looking for the Madonna, why we're even looking for the Maravilla. And he said, to hell with it. I'm not going to deal with that. I said, well, if you want to continue, I'm just warning you ahead of time. Well, after that rebellion, he decides at one particular point he flew back to California and got killed. His helicopter wrapped around high power lines, and down he went, and he's dead. Mm. So then his son had to take over the vessel, which had about 10 or 15 divers. They had a huge amount of investment in the project along with me. And I had all the answers, you know, because I had the contracts with the Bahamian government. So, you know, rebellion for ego reason or any reason and not really seeing this for what it is really puts you in a place of jeopardy. So you're asking for specific incidents. That's one of them. Mm-hmm. I felt very badly about it because I really liked the guy. And he was an old Vietnam veteran, and, you know, here he gets killed right in his own, just on a visit, intending to return to the project. So when you're on the water, you know, there's all kinds of things you got to be worried about. You know, even gold fever with the men. You know, I had one guy that had a wooden leg, and he was a good diver too.
Now you said gold fever. What is gold fever?
Well, I'll give you a great example of gold fever. This diver went down. And I didn't know it. He was unscrewing his wooden leg, and he was putting coins in there. And he'd screw it back up before he came to the surface using his scuba. That's gold fever and in its highest essence. And we caught him. And he took off his wooden leg and turned it upside down. All these coins fall out. Yeah. So that's gold fever.
Okay.
The best example of I know it.
It intrigued me there for a second. Now, we only have a couple minutes left in this episode, and not to give anything away really too much for next week, but I did want to kind of touch on something you mentioned at the beginning of the show today. Is you mentioned that you know where the statue is and that you have the best fault in the world. And then you mentioned something about radiation, and you mentioned the satellite, the Russian satellite. Give us a little cliffhanger to kind of keep us grasping for next week on what we're going to touch on. And we're going to touch on that just a little bit, and we'll dive really into that next week. But give us a little bit of a cliffhanger on what you were talking about at the beginning of the show with that.
Here I was trying to recover history, and history was happening right in front of me on a present day basis. And that's why the middle of our book is called Great Slave to Jupiter, where a Russian killer satellite, that's a marvelous story. that had uranium-235 on board, almost 100 pounds times more than what was at Hiroshima, Nagasaki. And they used it for power, and they lost control of it. And it decayed to Earth. And it was visible to 33 people. And where did this satellite, and how, and what was the story? Why did this satellite, actually reported by the Russian government during Reagan's regime, and that was decaying, and where was it going? And they warned us that a very important destination in the United States, it was decaying. You see, they could take a killer satellite and make it go anywhere they want to in space. And they, what they are, they call them killer satellites because they would explode. And anything next to them, of course, would be destroyed. And that's a great story in itself. That'll be a whole segment. Where was it going? And how did it get intercepted? And how is it connected with this story?